This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One.
I'm correspondent Tom Wilmer. Come along and join us for an exploration of Tennessee's heartland, the Upper Cumberland region. We'll visit with world champion Olympic freestyle kayaker Eric Jackson, who decided to start his own kayak company in Sparta, Tennessee. He's a world-class, legendary extreme kayaker.
After 8 years of living full-time in an RV with my wife and two kids, the Rock Island, Tennessee was the place we felt was the coolest place in the whole country. The second favorite place was Hood River, Oregon, were our two choices. And Rock Island won over Hood River. That's where we settled down. Backyard, big waterfall, good whitewater.
We'll then stop in for a visit with park rangers at two of Tennessee's most revered state parks, Fall Creek Falls.
Been picked the top park on several magazines. This place is just the diversity of it. The waterfalls, we have a fishing lake that has two state records out of it right now. We have hotels and cabins and restaurants and swimming pools and a golf course that's been listed number one a time or two.
And Standing Stone.
We have about 1,000 acres of park here, surrounded by about 10,000 acres of forestry land. We have vacation cabins that you can come stay in, 21 cabins and 3 group cabins. And we have a lodge. We also have 36 campsites. We have an Olympic-sized swimming pool.
Dave Sergio, co-founder of Calf Killer Brewery in Sparta, Tennessee, shares his passion for crafting unique brews, followed by a conversation with Barbara Delmonico, owner of Delmonico Winery and Vineyards in Baxter, Tennessee. Eric Jackson.
Kayak, live it, breathe it, eat it. You make them.
Well, I paddle kayaks, so if you're going to paddle kayaks a lot, and then you don't want to have to buy kayaks, the best way to not have to buy them is to make them and sell them, then other people buy them.
So you have a whole factory, right?
We do have a whole factory. The last thing in the world I ever thought I would do is have a kayak factory, because everybody I knew that had kayak factories, the one thing they never did anymore was go kayaking. But my wife challenged me. She said, I bet you could have a factory and go kayaking even more than you do already.
And you do.
I do.
But you live with a waterfall out your back door, I heard.
After 8 years of living full-time in an RV with my wife and two kids, the Rock Island, Tennessee was the place we felt was the coolest place in the whole country. The second favorite place was Hood River, Oregon, were our two choices. And Rock Island won over Hood River. That's where we settled down. Backyard, big waterfall, good whitewater. Bigger whitewater than even the Grand Canyon at high water. It's pretty epic.
Wow, that's incredible. Most people would not know that.
Most people would not know that. It's like one of these undiscovered places. It's almost like a secret place. Now, Rock Island State Park is actually becoming pretty popular. You know, we have a lot of videos on YouTube and stuff, and people start to know what it looks like and realize that this is an epic place to go. But still, we live in a middle of nowhere, a town of 200 people. So we have this little gem of a place, Twin Falls and Rock Island, Caney Fork River, that literally, in my opinion, the best kayaking place in the world.
And you're an international competition kayaker, right?
I am. I was in the 92 Olympics, and I've been on the U.S. kayak team since 89, so 27 years now.
And you're still competing.
I'm still competing. I won my last event a couple months ago, and I got third last weekend at the Coe race. So, yeah, I'm on the U.S. kayak team now. So I know about kayaking, I can tell you that. Yeah.
And your son-in-law, he kicked your butt, right?
My son-in-law, he beat me in the 2009 World Championships in Thun, Switzerland. I was second to him. That's where I thought I was going to win my fifth World Championship title, but he won. But now my son, Dane, who just turned 25, is the dominant male kayaker out there. So my whole family is trying to kick my butt every day, so my hardest competition is my son and my son-in-law. I don't know what I was thinking. I should have sent him to college or something. I don't know.
How old are you now?
I'm 54. I'll be turning 55 soon. So I'm obviously the older dude. And right. They call me the grandfather of the sport, you know. But I don't know, really think of it that way. But I am a grandfather, I guess. So I guess it fits.
There you go. Talk to me about the kayaks that you manufacture. What type are they, and how are they distinctive, and why?
Well, they're distinctive. One, you can recognize them right away because they say Jackson Kayak on them. Okay, that's the first thing. But We started as a whitewater kayak company, and the reality is our very first kayak we made was called the Fun One. It was for my son, Dane. He was 44 pounds at the time.
Wow.
So this is the first kayak in the history of the world designed for a 30 to 80 pound kid. So it was like the only kid's kayak out there. So that distinguished us from other people because we made a kayak for a market that didn't exist. But since then, we've cut the average age that a whitewater kayaker starts kayaking in half over the last 15 years just by making kids kayaks.
So what's the average age now?
The average age now of starting kayaking is in the teens, where it used to be, on average, people started in their 20s. It was just something you do after college and whatever, whatever. So we do that, but we also make fishing kayaks. Our new big thing is fishing kayaks. So a lot of people don't know this, but fishing is the largest sport in the U.S. in dollars and participation. Who would have thought, right? 40 million fishing licenses are sold in the U.S. a year. It's just crazy. But whitewater kayaking is like the smallest sport in the U.S., probably, I don't know. So in fishing kayaks has become actually our largest type of kayak, and we kind of redefined the fishing kayak by making the first kayaks you could actually stand up in and fish out of.
Oh, wow. And cost-wise, how would it compare to, say, like a Hobie Mirage?
Ah, good question. That would be one of our competitors. So actually, the one you mentioned, the Hobie there, that's one of the most expensive kayaks
out
there.
Yeah.
So we have kayaks that are more and we have kayaks that are less. So we just created the new Blue Sky Angler 360. It's a $3,500 boat. That's our most expensive boat we make. But on average, you can get into a fishing kayak from Jackson Kayak anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000 is pretty average. I run all the gadgets. I got my Raymarine electronics. I got my power pole on the back. I got for our whitewater kayaks are really simplistic, really cut to the bone, super lightweight. So they're all about performance and not about all the frills.
So to learn more about you and your kayaking and your kayaks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, jacksonkayak.com is the easy way to go. Of course, Facebook, we have Jackson Kayak. My Facebook is eric.ej.jackson, so it's all about my lifestyle, which is kayaking and fishing, basically, and family, that kind of thing.
And you got some videos, Eric?
Oh, yeah, you want to check out the videos. Of course, my YouTube channel, Eric Jackson. But the videos are all like action whitewater videos or fishing videos, just general recreational videos. But they're all just like Team Jackson Kayak, all the best kayakers and fishermen in the world that are out there just doing their thing, living the lifestyle. So anyway, it's pretty cool stuff. Definitely worth checking out.
Awesome, Eric. Thanks for sharing, man.
So nice to meet you here. I can't believe we're at the Brew and Blues Festival in Cookeville, Tennessee.
I know.
And you're Mr. Minnesota, now lives in California. Yeah. Cookeville, Tennessee. What do you think of Tennessee, by the way?
I love it. That's why I'm here.
I'm glad you're here. Yeah. I'm glad to share the state with you. And I wish I had a chance to show you around the factory.
Next time I would love to.
Well, you better come by and check it out. And we're going to get you in a kayak and we're going to go catch some Tennessee bass and muskie. What do you think of that?
I'm there.
All right, let's do it.
All right, Eric. Thanks again.
All right, you're welcome. Good to meet you, man.
Here we are in the heart of Tennessee. Chris Cole.
Yes, my name's Chris Cole. I'm the park manager here at Standing Stone State Park.
Standing Stone State Park is unique in the state of Tennessee, isn't it? There's some distinctive characteristics.
Yes, it's one of the few Works Progress Administration parks that we have in the state of Tennessee.
So that'd be mid-30s then when they were here, right?
Yes, it was built in the 1930s. It was built along the same times as the CCC parks, but Works Progress Administration parks were built by some older folks, and they were oftentimes married. It wasn't just 18-year-old men.
A lot of these guys were professionals in the trade that were out of work. The WPA gave them an opportunity, right?
Right. Sometimes they were a little more skilled and had a little more experience in the trades than their counterparts in the CCC.
Tell us about what is here, why somebody would go out of their way to come to Standing Stone.
Well, we have about 1,000 acres of park here, surrounded by about 10,000 acres of forestry land. We have vacation cabins that you can come stay in, 21 cabins and 3 group cabins, and we have a lodge. We also have 36 campsites. We have an Olympic-sized swimming pool, and we have several big events during the year.
What would be some of the more well-known annual events that take place?
Probably the best-known one would be the National Rolly Hole Marble Tournament. It takes place in September each year, about usually mid-September.
That's marbles, kids playing marbles contest, Trey.
Well, it's usually, actually the main tournament is older folks, and they've been playing marbles all their lives.
But
and
they were kids.
Absolutely, they were kids, but it's real serious business, the main marble tournament. Now, we have marble kids games there. We have marble making. We have bluegrass music, so there's a lot for everybody when you come to that.
And when does that take place again?
Mid-September every year.
You have a beautiful lake here, and I saw canoes that you could rent and kayaks, little pedal boats. That must be so much fun. I don't want to go. I want to stay and go out and do that.
Right. I wish you would. We have canoes, kayaks, paddle boards, rowboats, and we rent them all through the park office. And it's just a little 69-acre lake, but it's got a beautiful view. You can also bring your own kayaks and canoes and put them in the lake.
Talk to us a little bit about Overton Lodge.
The Overton Lodge, it sleeps 80 people. It's got a commercial kitchen and all the things you need for a big group. It's got a nice fireplace, and it's really out by itself. It makes a beautiful place to come visit.
So that is for corporate groups to rent, or can individuals stay in the rooms?
Anybody that would like to rent it can. It's kind of set up in a dormitory type setting. So most of what we have is church group and large family reunions.
Tell us a little bit more detail about the cabins. These were built, again, in the 1930s. They're vintage, original, tons of character.
Yes, most of our cabins, 14 of the cabins, are rustic cabins, and they were built by the Works Progress Administration. They're built out of chestnut wood that isn't even around anymore. They're log cabins. They've got rock fireplaces. They are really beautiful.
And how much average might it cost per night for a cabin?
They're usually during the week, they're $70 a night, so they're very affordable. All your linens are furnished, and it has a full kitchen, and so everything you really need.
That's pretty incredible. I feel like I'm way far away from any city, and yet how far to Nashville?
It's probably just a little over an hour to Nashville, but you can be in Cookeville in about 35 or 40 minutes, so you know you're not too far away from everything. You can go to a restaurant or something if you want there. And Livingston is just 15 minutes away, so we've got some places there to eat and grocery stores and anything you need.
And again, what are some of the other draws? The hikers, you have extensive hiking trails.
We do have a 5-mile trail that goes all the way around the lake.
We just went on part of that this morning, huh? And that was pretty slippery because it just been raining.
Yes, it was a little slippery this morning, but a lot of days are beautiful and dry, and it's a great time to go on a nice hike. We have a lot of people come here to fish. We've got volleyball, we've got basketball, we've got a place for softball, just about anything you can imagine.
And open year round, middle of the winter, what happens here?
We actually are open 365 days a year. So the office closes 4 days a year, 2 days for Thanksgiving and 2 days for Christmas. But other than that, we're open all the time. Even on those days, there's a ranger working and the park is open.
Chris, how would somebody learn more about the park?
You can just log on to your computer and go to Tennessee State Parks website and it'll link you right to the park. No problem.
And the name of the park?
Standing Stone State Park.
Chris Cole, Tennessee State Parks Ranger, thank you so much for visiting. What a great morning.
I very much enjoyed it. Thank you all for coming today.
Hello, I'm Robin Bayless. I'm a ranger here at Fall Creek Falls State Park. I've been here for 40 years. I've seen a lot of changes. This park, very special to me because it's been in my generation for years.
So you grew up with
it. Yes, I'm actually third generation. My great uncle helped open this park, and then there's been a descendant of him, rangers right on down to me, and there's still one left when I leave. I'm probably going to leave in March. Dread going, but I've just been here long enough.
Well, you got a next generation coming up.
Got a next generation coming up. He's here and got another generation coming up.
I've been told this is the most popular state park in the state of Tennessee. Is that true?
Well, I'd like to say so. I think it is.
Well, you've heard that
I've
said.
I've heard that.
Right?
We've been picked the top park on several magazines and Standard Living and all that stuff. We've been number one choice for on those sometimes.
And why? I've been to quite a few state parks in Tennessee. They're all cool, but mm-hmm. There must be something extra special about it.
I think this place is just the diversity of it. We have the waterfalls. We have something to offer a lot of people. We have a fishing lake that has two state records out of it right now. We have hotels and cabins and restaurants and swimming pools. And we've got a golf course that's been listed number one a time or two. And then with all the scenery and stuff around, it's just a great place and diversified for family people to come.
Would you say the majority of the people that come to visit and stay here are from around the state and the region, or do you get people from all over, everywhere?
There's a lot of folks that come locally from around, but ever so often we like to just drive through and do a license plate check, and we see them from all over. We get a lot of visitors from Georgia and Florida, And then, oddly enough, I don't know why it all the way goes up, but from Indiana and Ohio and Michigan, we get a lot of visitors from those folks.
Tell us again about places to stay and places to eat.
Okay, we have a restaurant that's under construction right now, but when it opens back up, we have a nice restaurant there. And then through the summer months, when it's really going on, we have a snack bar that's got a grill and stuff up at the swimming pool. And then our golf course has a little snack bar in it that's really an unknown thing that people don't know much about. But right now with our restaurant closed, they're getting a little business and getting known. But a lot of folks eat up there.
We're coming into the end of fall here. Color hasn't happened yet, but it will in any moment. Mm-hmm. Then one day you're going to wake up and it's going to be winter time.
We were afraid it's just going to go from summer to winter. We're going to miss the fall.
Yeah, that's what it feels like, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
So when winter comes, what happens here in the park?
Well, it slows down, and then we're going to have, over in the campground, we're having a little event going along this weekend that's the Spooktacular for Halloween. We're going to have a little Halloween, and the campers are going to dress up their campsites and pick out a good campsite, and then we're going to have a little thing all day that day with around Halloween, have fun, give out some gifts and some hay rides. Then a little later on in the year, we'll have Christmas on the Mountain out here. And it's local crafts making Christmas presents the old-timey way, and people come, and they're not allowed to bring their stuff made overseas.
Store-bought stuff,
yeah. And actually, it may even be a Tennessee thing. Mm-hmm. It has to be made in Tennessee, so it's not, you're not going to find the mail-order stuff. It's it's going to be homegrown things.
And in the middle of the winter, you get snow on the ground here?
We get snow on the ground. Sometimes the lake freezes over. The waterfalls really look pretty on the freeze when they start freezing, of course, from the bottom and the top. Sometimes it stays cold long enough for it to
all the way up.
All the way up. You know, you've got the icicles hanging down, and then you have the little thing at the bottom that forms and looks like a volcano growing. So they finally meet one another if it stays cold long enough.
So in other words, it's a great time to come to the park in the middle of the winter.
Middle of the winter. You know, if you're coming camping, it's going to be a little cold. Mm-hmm. But the cabins and stuff, they've got fireplaces and things in them, and we furnish firewood. It's a good place to stay and hike.
And how close are you to a hub city, Nashville, for example?
If you will draw a triangle from Nashville to Chattanooga to Knoxville, connect them all around.
Right.
We're in the middle of that triangle. It's about the same distance to Nashville, a little closer to Chattanooga, a little further away to Knoxville.
So you draw people from all three major metro areas.
Oh, yes. And we get a lot of folks from Nashville.
And then if you're close to Georgia border, like you were saying, you get them from across the line, too.
Get them across the line from Georgia. A lot of folks coming up from Georgia.
It's interesting, too, because you're kind of a little bit of north, a little bit of the south. You know, it's an interesting mix in Tennessee, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we're up on the plateau, and anywhere from here is down. And anybody that comes here has got to come up. So, but we're not, the tallest mountains, but we're on the plateau. And
what's the elevation here?
It's about 1,800 feet. We do have some knobs around that's up in around the 1960.
So 2,000 feet, maybe.
2,000 feet.
And once again, the sound we hear in the background is the old hotel coming down, being demolished.
And they're real excited about getting what new coming back in.
And when do you think the new property will be open up?
It's probably going to be about two and a half years is what they're saying.
Thanks for sharing.
Yes, sir. My name's Robin Bayless, and if you need any further information, you can go to the Tennessee website. Just look up state parks, and then that'll tell you all the state parks and places you can do your reservations online for the cabins and the campgrounds. And
you can find out pricing.
Find out pricing and information, and also what's going on. There's a calendar of events in there.
Robin, thanks again for sharing.
Yes, sir. You're welcome.
We're here in Cookeville, Tennessee. This is Blues and Brews Beer Festival for 2018. I'm Dave Sergio, owner, co-owner, and brewer of Calf Killer Brewing Company.
You started this?
We did.
Yeah.
Yeah, my brother and I, probably about 12 years ago, we were just home brewers. Carpenters, by trade, home brewers by the side, man, and we went through and just kind of started kind of throwing around the idea of having a little small brewery that we could, just kind of make some beer for ourselves, for our families, maybe some weddings and parties and things like that. And now it's blossomed into where we've now been in business for over 8 years. We were the first craft brewery in the area here.
How many are there now?
Put it this way, we were the fifth production brewery in the state of Tennessee, and I think now there's close to 90.
Wow.
So, and it's, we've kind of been going, and it's just kind of making beers, having fun. it's kind of kicking it, you know?
And what do people associate with you when they think beer? You know, is there some signature brew that you make?
I think a lot of times people associate our beers with my brother and I. Just kind of, we have most time outlandish fashion. We're kind of loud, talkative guys who make very approachable beers that even if you're not a beer connoisseur, you can enjoy. But if you're of the heavy beer geek persuasion, you can really enjoy the stuff that you can find the subtle nuances in the beers that we create.
Do you have any problem breaking rules?
No, not at all. We opened a brewery in a dry county. You couldn't buy beer in our county, man, until we started brewing beer. And then it's like we had to fight some laws and stuff like that. But now it's we've turned to where we're about to have another brewery open in our little city, man. And we've been able to kind of go through and do what we love, and hopefully by doing what we love, show some passion for the art of creating beer that's maybe expanded onto some other folks and inspired them.
When people think of you, is there a drop-dead signature beer that first comes to mind?
I think most time it's the Grassroots Ale, which the Grassroots is one of our flagship beers along with the J. Henry Original Mild. But I think most of the thing, it's like people find that beer, and it's a wonderful little pale ale of sorts that has our signature yeast in it. It has a Kafkiller River water. It has kind of our components that when people go through and they go, hey, check this out, this is Kafkiller beer. But then we also have a nice little beer that's got a really long name. It's a wonderful little beer that's made with local honey and oats. It's just a very balanced, easy drinking little beer.
Where are you located?
We're located in Sparta, Tennessee, which
right
is
downtown?
Next, we're actually off the beaten path a little bit. We're about 4 miles off the square in my brother's backyard. So we went through and converted a little small horse barn into a home brewery, and then added on to it later on to make our full-fledged brewery now.
Nice. And your distribution today is?
We do. We have about 130 accounts that have the beer throughout Tennessee, but most of it's located between Nashville, Knoxville, and Chattanooga. Dave Sergio, Kafkiller Brewing Company, Sparta, Tennessee.
Dave, thanks for sharing. What a fun day.
Thanks, Tom. We appreciate it, man. Pleasure to meet you, my friend.
Oh, yeah. Barbara Delmonico. Here we are at Delmonico Winery and Vineyards. Hi.
Hi, Tom. It's good that you're here.
It's great that I'm here. I am so impressed with you guys. You've been working really hard, and nobody knows this behind the scenes. For what, 10 years creating this?
10 years, yes. We have just turned 10 years old, and it's been an adventure.
Well, let's go back in time 10 years, or 11 or 12. And you guys had a vision and you had a dream.
Well, just be careful what you wish for is all I can say, because we made wine in our basement at home, and we put a couple of acres of vines in at our house, and we were just making wines for ourselves. It wasn't good wine. It was just making wine. Then we found this 52 acres and we thought, oh, well, we'll plant some vines and sell to the local wineries. But then when we got the first 12 acres out, it was like, well, there's not a winery here, so maybe we'll just put in a winery. And then David, my husband, with his construction background, he's built this massive winery. And we are in kind of like a no man's land here, very rural area.
Weren't you scared at some point?
I don't think so.
You didn't know any better then.
Exactly. You have an idea and you think it's going to work and you go for it. I mean, what else do you do, right?
Right.
We did. We went for it. David built this nice, beautiful building that we're in, and it has a venue that we have weddings and different events. We do a lot of fundraisers, a lot of fun activities here.
And so your clientele, are they mostly in the region that come to visit you or from everywhere?
They're from everywhere because we are centrally located in Tennessee, and Tennessee is such a beautiful state for people to visit. So we do get people in from all across the country.
Why do they come? What do they expect to find, and what do they find when they come here?
Well, a lot of people are wine lovers, and they enjoy stopping at the wineries, and I do encourage that. You learn so much, and then you get to talk with the people that are knowledgeable about wines, and our whole staff is fabulous and very knowledgeable about the wines.
Well, let's dig deeper on wine. What grape varietals did you choose, and why?
We grow what's conducive to this area. We tried some vinifera in here that it was too cold for it to grow here. So we lost a lot of vines during that time. But, you know, you research and see what grows in your area and then make the best wines that you can.
So you've been doing it long enough, you know what works now.
Well, I guess we've had vines in the ground for 14 years now. But we just won the Governor's Cup Award for Tennessee-grown, Tennessee-made Concord wine. It's called Concord Falls, and we just won the Governor's Cup Award for that.
Wow. And Concord grapes, they're a classic Americana. They go way back to the Mayflower days.
Yes, they do. And get this. So prior to Prohibition, Tennessee was one of the largest grape producers in the country. So there was a lot of wine made in this area prior to Prohibition.
It's so funny because in modern iteration, everybody's so California-centric. They think wine and grapes were invented there, but not so.
That's correct. Yeah. And muscadine is native to this area. It's a grape that's grown wild here in the Southeast for many years. Well, forever that I know of. So a lot of the Southeast people here, you know, all the way from Texas all the way to South Carolina, they know what the muscadine grape is. And that was probably the homemade hooch that people were making when Prohibition did happen.
Interesting. So other than Concord, what are some of your classic grapes and wines that people expect to find?
Concord is grows very well here, so that's a good one to make wines with. And we use it for blending in some of our wines. We do a lot of blends, and our winemaker does a fabulous job. We actually have two winemakers. One's kind of an apprentice, and he's doing an amazing job. We have like 12 varietals that we grow. Noray, Traminette, Steuben, Cynthiana, Foch, and there's others as well.
And anything on the horizon, any daring ventures that you're thinking about doing?
Oh, you're funny, Tom. My man, I'm still enjoying this one so much. I don't know that there's any more adventures that I can handle at this time.
So you're in the midst of a big adventure, though.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. So, and I love the people that come in. The people that come through our front door, the wine lovers, are fun people, and we just don't get the grumpy people.
Self-filtering, yeah.
Yeah.
You're right in the heart of Tennessee, aren't you? Basically central?
We are. We're right in the middle of Tennessee. We are about an hour from Nashville, an hour from Knoxville, an hour from Chattanooga. So we're right off the Interstate 40, and it just works out real good that people can come in and visit with us.
Yeah, being right off of Interstate 40, that makes it real simple.
Yes. And then we also have a Harvest Host. That's an organization that's across the whole country that people that are traveling in RVs can stop at the different Harvest Hosts.
Tell us more about that.
Harvest Host is for people that are traveling in their RVs, and myself, I'm a Harvest Host welcomer. They'll call you up and say, can we have overnight accommodations? We don't give them electric or water or anything like that.
It's so they just have to be self-contained, but they have a place to park.
Right, and then they get to visit our farm here, the winery, and enjoy the vineyard with us for a day or two.
They probably walk away with a bottle or two for the road, huh?
Yeah, that's one of the benefits of being a host member.
Behind us is a big, grand, like a living room, meeting room. Tell us about that space.
That is our Bella Room. We hold up to 300 people in our Bella Room, and it is beautiful and it is grand. And we do a lot of weddings, a lot of events, and we do a lot of fundraisers, too, because it's real important to our area, the volunteer state. So we all try to chime in there together and help each other out.
What's the nearest town?
Cookeville, Tennessee. We're a suburb. I'm actually in Baxter. My address is a Baxter, Tennessee, but Cookeville is the main city here.
So that's where you go to the grocery store, then?
Yes, and I live there, too.
There he goes. Any plans to build your home here?
We do have a subdivision that goes, there's only 20 lots in it. Mm-hmm. We've sold almost half of the lots with several of the houses built, and all of the houses face the vineyard, so they're basically their front yards mm-hmm. are a vineyard.
And are you keeping one lot for yourself?
No, we built our home just a few years back, and
You're settled in.
I'm probably very comfortable with what's going on at where I live, yes.
Okay. Barbara, you're not the only Lone Ranger here that's making wine in the region. There are other ones, right?
Right. We have 8 wineries here in the Upper Cumberland. We're working toward our own AVA here in Tennessee for the Upper Cumberland. Actually, across Tennessee, we have about 75 wineries. When I first opened 10 years ago, I think we were number 30. So it's growing every year. We have new wineries popping up, and they're fabulous.
Any other new ones coming up close to you in the area?
There's one that's getting ready to open. I don't know a whole lot about them right now.
It is a case where competition is good.
Yes, we all work together. And our wine trail, after you visit all 8 wineries, you get a prize at the end of the trail. So, yeah, we all help each other out.
What's your favorite personal wine? If we were going to open a bottle right now, what would you go get us?
I would have to ask you what your preference is, because I am so fortunate that I can enjoy any of the wines at any time.
So what you're saying is you're spoiled.
Okay, I'll take that. Yeah. I mean, my husband has spoiled me. He is definitely the better half of our situation. And
okay, but we still got to choose. Go in and choose one bottle. What are you going to walk out with?
I'm not going to do that. I'm going to ask you what your preference is.
You are just too gracious of a host.
Well, you know, we do dry wines, we do reds, whites, we do sweet wines. In fact, I send a lot of wines to California because they like the sweeter wines out there that they can't get there.
Yeah, they're almost outlawed in California, I think.
I think so. So we're we are breaking the law.
Yeah.
We sell a lot more sweet wines than we do the dry wines, but my winemaker will make the dry wines for me.
Before we go, talk to us about a statewide association.
TFWA, Tennessee Farm Wine Growers Alliance. We are a statewide organization. We help each other out as well and work together. We have festivals, we have meetings, we have grape growers have roundtables to discuss issues that are going on. The local universities help us out.
Do some co-op marketing too?
Co-op marketing, absolutely. Whenever there is a festival going on, all of the wineries are advertised in that.
So to learn more about Delmonico Winery and Vineyards, how would we do that?
Come by and see us.
And what if I was 2,000 miles away? Would I go to Facebook? Do you have a website?
Yes, follow us on Facebook. We got a lot of events going on. Of course, we have a website, delmonicowinery.com. So, yeah, Google us. You'll find us.
I'll do that. Barbara Delmonico, what a pleasure to meet you.
Tom, it's been a pleasure to meet you as well.
I know. Meant to be.
Yeah.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Tennessee. We'll see you here. The underbid music was performed by 5-time Grammy Award-winning musician David Holt.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided in part by the Society of St. Vincent de Paul. People often associate the Society of St. Vincent de Paul with thrift stores. Donations like clothing, your gently used couch, or still serviceable washing machine generate funds to assist the Society in putting food on the table for people in need, or keeping the lights on and families in their homes. To find a St. Vincent de Paul thrift store in your area, visit svdpusa.org. Once again, svdpusa.org. And whether you're shopping for new or used items, donating them, or volunteering, you're helping the Society of St. Vincent de Paul help others.